Joseph Quinlan, a pioneer of the Right to Die movement, died Saturday at the age of 71 of bone cancer. In 1975, his daughter Karen Ann Quinlan lapsed into a coma that doctors said she would never come out of. In a landmark court case, Joseph Quinlan and his wife Julia won the right to disconnect Karen from her respirator. But she continued to live in a coma for 9 more years before succumbing to pneumonia. Joseph and his wife Julia founded a hospice in Karen's name in New Jersey, and that is where Joseph died. When Joseph and Julia Quinlan joined us last April on the 20th anniversary of their legal decision, we were moved by the depth of their commitment to their daughter, their sustaining faith, and the grace with which they survived their ordeal. Joseph said he was the last person in the family to accept that Karen would never emerge from her coma.
I have a very strong faith, and I was still holding out for a miracle, praying a night and day for a miracle, and finally, I began to realize that there wasn't going to be any miracle, that this was just something that I would have to go through. And it was very difficult for me. And the only way I could possibly accept what was happening was, in my own mind, to place her in the loving, gentle hands of the Lord and ask Him to use her as any way He wanted to reach anybody, any place in the world with His message. And when He was through, the only thing I asked is that He raise her up with Him. And then that way I was able to accept it that, yes, we were going to lose Karen.
During the 9 years that your daughter remained in a coma in a nursing home, how much time were you able to spend with her? How much time did you feel you needed to spend with her?
Well, we visited her in our own time. I visited her generally after work in the afternoons. And sometimes my husband and I would visit her in the evenings. She was in a private room, and we were able to spend as much time with her as we wanted to. We were able to sit there and to play music for her, or to just talk to her, or to just sit by her bedside without worrying that our 5 minutes would be up, which is usually the problem in ICU,
right,
in the hospital, so that it was more relaxed. Of course, visiting Karen for the 9 years became our way of life. And we had accepted it.
I visited Karen every morning on my way into my business and every evening on the way home. Now, it was altogether different from the hospital. It was a lot easier for me then in that her medical records were available to me. They had them set up at a little table. I'd sit down at a chair and take a look at her notes and see what kind of a night she had and look at the nicest notes. And then in the evening, I'd see what kind of a day she had. And any questions at all, they would ask me. And it really took beautiful care of Karen, tying her and spotlessly clean. And they told the physician in charge that they would treat her like it was their own daughter. And they did.
You fought very hard to get your daughter taken off the respirator. You went to court for it. Then you fought the doctors when they still resisted you after the New Jersey Supreme Court decided in your favor. Did you at any point think that you should take her off the feeding tube that she was on when she remained in a coma for years after she was taken off the respirator?
You mean ourselves?
Well, to have the nursing home take her off the machine that was feeding her.
No, not really. We went up before an ethics committee before they admitted Karen, and they had the first time, I guess, the ethics committee was used any place in New Jersey, and they all stood around and they just asked us one question. What kind of care do you expect for us to give your daughter? And we answered that. We just expected normal care, comfort, palliative care. And they just looked at each other and they said, well, that's it. And it was so simple, the care that we was asking for. We never asked for anything additional, nor did we ever ask him to remove anything.
The questions about the feeding tube did not come into play until later. I think it was with the woman's name was Claire, and it was someplace in New Jersey. That's when they started to question the feeding tube. But that was a feeding tube that was placed in the stomach. Because Karen was just fed through the nostrils. It was a gastro-nostril feeding tube. It was not perhaps what you're thinking of, the feeding tube where you go to court to ask to have that removed.
But she was getting fed through a tube
through
her nose?
Right, exactly. It was just the gastro-feeding tube through the nose.
It was still like a machine that was keeping her alive by feeding her. She wasn't eating, obviously.
No, she couldn't eat, of course. It was...
So how did that seem different?
It was a pharmaceutical product, really. Right. You know, it wasn't food. People referred to it as food and water, and they make you feel bad because it's the most essential thing that you can do for your child is to give them food and water. But it wasn't food and water. It was a pharmaceutical product, a substitute for food, you see. But we still permitted it because we never asked for that, and we didn't want to start asking for something else then.
Now, why did you draw the line there? And did the medical establishment draw the line there as well, that it was one thing to take her off the respirator, it would be another thing to take away nutrition?
I mentioned to you how I resolved this in my own mind by placing her in the loving, gentle hands of the Lord, and I asked him to use her as his instrument to reach others and so forth. And in his time, when he was ready, I asked him to take her with him to his kingdom. Now, to me to go back years later and say, all right, God, I'm going to take over now and remove the feeding tube, knowing she would die, I just couldn't do that. I wanted to keep her in the Lord's hands and let him decide when she was going to go. And it was simply a matter of faith, that's all.
We're featuring an interview with Joseph and Julia Quinlan. Joseph Quinlan died Saturday of bone cancer. We'll hear more of the interview after a break. This is Fresh Air. Back to our interview from earlier this year with Joseph and Julia Quinlan, pioneers in the Right to Die movement and parents of Karen Ann Quinlan. Joseph died Saturday of bone cancer. It sounds to me, Mr. Quinlan, from what you were saying before, that when you prayed to God, you didn't pray that your daughter live or that she be released from this netherworld that she was in, that you prayed that God would just do the right thing.
I felt he would use her as his instrument, as he always does use us, and I wanted him to use Karen, have something good come out of this. And then in his time, that's all, I asked him to take her, raise her up with him. And that's what I feel with all my heart he did. When finally Karen did leave this world, we were at her bedside. We received a call from the physician and from the nurse, rather, who was told by the physician to call and suggest we come down as soon as possible. We were down there. Father Tom was had his forehead on her, had his hand on her forehead while he read out of his Bible, and Julie was holding a hand, and I was on the other side of the bed praying silently, standing, looking down at her when she stopped breathing. So beautiful, so peaceful, you know. We couldn't have asked for anything more.
Mr. and Mrs. Quinlan, you started a hospice that opened on April 15th, 1980, on the fifth anniversary of your daughter going into a coma. Tell me why you decided to start a hospice.
Well, when Karen was in the ICU unit, it's when I became aware of the patient's needs and also of their family's needs. As I had mentioned before, you were permitted to visit your loved one only 5 minutes on the hour or on the half hour. And you just sat in the waiting room, just waiting and waiting for the next half hour. And I just felt that there had to be a better way to, because you wanted those, that's the time when you want to spend with your loved one and to be able to hold your loved one, to be with them or her as often as possible. So we had received monies for the sale of our book and for the magazine articles, and of course we had no intentions of spending the money on ourselves, and we were looking for some memorial that we could put in Karen's name. Just by accident, I happened to read an article about Dr. Cicely Saunders, who formed the hospice in London. And when I was reading this, I realized hospice is the philosophy that we all believe in, that when a patient is terminal, that you just give them palliative, loving care. And my husband and I, then after that, for 3 years, we visited different hospices in this country. We met with Dr. Cicely Saunders in London, and we made the decision that we wanted to establish a hospice in memory to our daughter, Karen.
In many ways, you both helped to start the Right to Die debate and the Living Will movement. Do you think of yourselves in that way, as two of the people who helped start this?
Well, we don't really, but people call us the pioneers of it, yes. We have never, ever, and we still don't consider ourselves as celebrities. We were just the parents of Karen, and we wanted to do what we felt was right for our loving daughter.
Julia and Joseph Quinlan recorded last April. Joseph died of bone cancer at the age of 71 Saturday at the hospice he and his wife founded in memory of their daughter Karen Ann Quinlan.